Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Why do you define the market that broadly? Healthcare. It may well be that everybody needs healthcare sooner or later, but not everybody needs a heart transplant. Not everybody needs a liver transplant.
That's correct, Justice Scalia, but you never know whether you're...
Could you define the market? Everybody has to buy food sooner or later, so you define the market as food. Therefore, everybody's in the market. Therefore, you can make people buy broccoli.
Tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I thought a major point of your argument was that the people who don't participate in this market are making it much more expensive.
I can't listen to this
people.
Yenta. I'm sorry. I have to turn the Yenta, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the ACLU, Harridan off. I'm sorry. She never should have been put on the Supreme Court. She's a lifetime communist. She was the former chief counsel for the ACLU, which should have disqualified her from the Supreme Court. But with the aid of Republicans along the lines of Orrin Hatch, she was put on the court, and America has suffered ever since. The key point about Obamacare is that it is unconstitutional, as I pointed out in great detail in Trickle Up Poverty, citing the case of the Schechter brothers, which I will tell you about again in a moment. It's very important for you to hear this, though. If you go back to 1799, that's right, 1799 case law, South Carolina's highest court said, so cautiously does the law watch over all contracts that it will not permit any to be binding, but such as are made by persons perfectly free and at full liberty to make or refuse such contracts. Listen to this now. Contracts to be binding must not be made under any restraint or fear of their persons, otherwise they are void. So in other words, if you've entered into a business contract where the other side says, sign it or I'll sue you, that contract will be void if it goes to the Supreme Court, incidentally. But that's a separate point. The next point is, what do I have to say about Obamacare that I haven't said in Trickle Up Poverty that requires you to study Trickle Down Tyranny? I'll read it to you. Page 76, Trickle Down Tyranny, the one book that can stop this tyrannical administration. Obama's Leninist tactics continue with his seizure of American wealth, though his method of seizing property is less direct than Lenin's. Lenin simply sent his thugs out to seize the property of Russian citizens who didn't want to give everything to the ruling party. Agents of the Soviet government would enter a village and systematically take all the meager possessions of its inhabitants. These included virtually all clothing, from jackets and trousers and dresses to shoes and winter underwear. Household items from kitchen utensils to bedding were also seized, leaving the peasantry with literally not so much as a pot to cook in. Obama doesn't send his thugs directly into Americans' homes. He simply taxes us into poverty. Since he took office, Obama has added 21 new taxes on Americans. 21. Many of them are part of the Obamacare legislation. Did you know that as of 2014, if you're not buying qualifying health insurance, a family with two adults will pay $190 or 1% of its adjusted gross income in increased taxes? Did you know any of that? You wouldn't know that from listening to the leftists in the media, would you? By 2016, that tax number will increase to $1,390 or 2.5% of your adjusted gross income. That's just the beginning of the president's wealth confiscation plan. What if you're a small business owner with 50 or more employees who does not offer health insurance through your company, and at least one of your employees qualifies for a health tax credit under Obamacare? Well, you'll have to pay an additional non-deductible tax of $2,000 for every one of your employees beginning in 2014. If any of your employees receives health insurance through the Obamacare Insurance Exchange, your tax rises to $3,000 per employee. Do you hear what I'm saying to you? I read the bill. Did you read it? If you're one of the wealthy Americans making $200,000 annually, $250 for a family, you'll have to pay an additional tax on your investment income starting in 2013. This means that your top tax rate on investment income would rise from 15% on long-term capital gains to 23.8%. Dividends, other investment, top rate goes from 15 to 43% under this Leninist president. Obamacare also includes tax hikes for the following: Medicare payroll tax, health savings account withdrawals, companies that manufacture medical devices, people who suffer from serious medical conditions and itemize their medical expenses on their tax returns, people with special needs children, retirees who get drug benefits as part of their pensions, charitable hospitals, companies that develop new drugs and health insurers. All of you will get a major tax boost, tax hike rather, under Obamacare. I call that confiscation. Do you understand that it's nothing more than another part of Obama's Leninist takeover strategy? In Obama's America, as it was in Lenin's Russia, certain people are given favored treatment based on their standing and influence with the government. We're all familiar with the Obamacare exemptions, which grant waivers from complying with the law to more than 1,000 of these favored corporations and labor unions. Did you know that? Did you know that over 1,000 corporations and labor unions have been exempted from Obamacare? Nearly 20% of the 204 waivers approved in April 2011 were granted to gourmet restaurants, nightclubs, and fancy hotels in Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi's district. Fully half of all the people covered by the waivers are members of labor unions. The administration is simply excluding these political favorites from having their money confiscated through Obamacare. It goes on. Obama's capitalist cronies are also exempted from having to pay corporate income taxes in many cases. General Electric's Jeffrey Immelt is the prime example. In a blatant payback to GE for its political support of the president's policies, Obama appointed Immelt to the position of job czar, head of the president's council on jobs and competitiveness. Did you hear what I'm saying to you? Immelt defined his mission as making the commission a sounding board for ideas and a catalyst for action on jobs and competitiveness. Well, he's done that by making our economic adversaries more competitive through outsourcing American jobs overseas and continuing to undermine job creation in the United States. Do you know what he's done? Do you know what he's done or not? The stenographers who pose as journalists in the new Obama government media complex never bothered to question whether Immelt's appointment as job czar or the transfer to China of the very jobs he is supposed to protect were covered. They have not questioned GE's tax status either. Write this one down. It's page 79 of Trickle Down Tyranny. Although the company declared $14.2 billion in profits in 2010, up 77% from the previous year, more than $9 billion were earned offshore and were not subject to the 35% U.S. corporate tax rate, the highest in the world. GE was not taxed at the 35% tax rate. GE wasn't taxed at all for its U.S. earnings. In fact, not only did GE pay no taxes on the $5.1 billion it earned in the U.S. in 2010, but it actually got a $3.2 billion corporate tax credit. Now, do you understand why GE takes a street rat like Al Sharpton and puts him on MSNBC? Do you understand how this works? GE maintains the largest and best corporate tax department in the world and manages to navigate the maze of corporate tax regulations better than any other multinational company. GE manages to buy the support of the Obama administration as one of the president's favorite crony capitalists. Do you think the corporate giant got away with murder in 29? Its 2010 corporate tax return was 57,000 pages long. Its profit was $14 billion, nearly three times the year before. And take a guess how much tax GE paid. Zero. Zero. Immelt and General Electric aren't alone in their ability to evade taxes. Page 79 of Trickle Down Tyranny. Would you like a list of all the other companies that have paid no federal income tax? I'll tell you about them when I return as we continue to discuss the seizure of private property by Barack Hussein Obama under the guise of caring for all with health care a la Fidel Castro. I'll be right back.
Savage. turn it slightly. You see, this is a different interpretation of sin than you may have heard, which is you're no good, you're evil, cut it off. No, that's wrong.
Savage.
I've got an 18-year-old son. My heart goes out to the Martins. I'm a black man. And like my friend George, I'm just trying to do the right thing.
We honestly believe that Trayvon Martin is dead today because of he was racially profiled. And because of that, this escalated and it led to the fatal altercation where George Zimmerman, a neighborhood watch volunteer with a 9mm gun, killed Trayvon Benjamin Martin, a 17-year-old unarmed teen who only had a bag of Skittles and an Arizona iced tea can trying to get home from the 7-Eleven.
Well, there's another case that has America gripped, which is the fact that we all wish that this young man were alive today. Let's start with that. We all wish that Trayvon Martin were alive. We wish he were not hurt and not dead, but he's dead. And now you've got two sides of the story. You've got the Zimmerman side saying he was fighting for his life and he shot the guy under duress. And then you got people who were not there, like Jesse High Jackson and Al Sharptongue, trying to cash in on race hatred by throwing lighter fluid onto an incendiary situation. Even the President of the United States, unfortunately, injected himself into this horrible case without knowing the facts, along the lines of many other things that the President's known for, injecting himself into situations where he doesn't know all of the facts. Now, I could ask you who you think the responsible party is, but what's the point of doing this? This is for a court of law to do. Zimmerman will be tried. There is no question that the Black Panthers, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and other demagogues are trying to lynch Zimmerman without a trial. The very horrors that some blacks were subjected to in the South of many centuries, several centuries ago, is trying to be relived by these individuals, which I thought America had moved past. In a few minutes on the Savage Nation, we're going to have the former head of the NAACP, who agrees with those of us who say don't lynch Zimmerman. And he also has some very harsh things to say about High Jackson and Sharptongue. You'll hear him. And of course, once he says it, it will not be picked up by the vermin in the media who are capitalizing on this horrible situation. If you care to talk about the death of this young man, you can do so, or Obamacare, you can do so. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The fact of the matter is, on the issue of Obamacare, I covered this in great detail in Trickle Up Poverty, and I cite case law. You know what amazes me is I watched the so-called opinion makers on various channels today, and they're all acting as though this was never, ever discussed before, meaning a government forcing individuals via mandate. The fact is, this was covered. The very same thing was done to Americans under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the first socialist president of the United States of America. FDR tried to force individuals to do certain things that were unconstitutional. He even put several Jewish butchers in jail because they would not comply with him. They were the Schechter brothers, famous Schechter brothers case. The Schechter brothers, little guys from Brooklyn, came out of jail, got a lawyer, and sued FDR, went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court sided with the Schechter brothers, and that was the end of Obamacare. That was the end of FDR's attempts to completely orchestrate the lives of individuals back in the 1940s. So what Obama is doing now is just another power grab, well known to dictators around the world on minor and major scales. I believe the Supreme Court will do the right thing, and they will cite the case law that I pointed out both in Trickle Up Poverty and Trickle Down Tyranny. Period. End of story. And we get on with our lives. Hopefully Romney will get a pair of you-know-what and stop listening to those morons who are advising him, and he will run a real campaign instead of this wimpy corporate kind of campaign, which is going nowhere. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. What else would you like to talk about? Well, I don't know. Did you know that the charges against the militia members up in Michigan were thrown out? Hey, by the way, going back to this case, this horrible situation of Trayvon Martin, you know how many times I've been right? Do you remember the Kobe Bryant case when the Rocky Mountain white trash accused them of raping her? Whose side was I on? Raise your hand in this audience if you remember which side Michael Savage took when Kobe Bryant, black basketball player, was falsely accused by the Rocky Mountain white trash who was trying to get money out of him. Michael Savage took whose side? Well, a buzzer just went off. I took the side of Kobe Bryant. Now, what about the Duke Lacrosse case? Who was it who analyzed it and within 2 days told you that that trasher was making up the whole story about white boys raping her? Their lives were almost ruined. Do you remember that one? I called that one correctly. Now, the Michigan militia case, do you remember that? You remember they were accused by the Obama administration of plotting a war against the government? You forgot them already. A bunch of poor white people from Michigan were accused in the Michigan militia and rounded up as homegrown extremists, accused of plotting war against the U.S. Do you remember what happened? Well, guess what? The government just lost the case. A federal judge just dismissed the most serious charges against 7 members of the Michigan militia. I was right about that again. Did you hear what I just said to you? This is a major embarrassment for the tyrannical Obama administration, for the tyrannical Eric Holder, which secretly planted an informant and an FBI agent inside the Hutterite militia 4 years ago, and then made up a story that members were armed for war in rural southern Michigan. It was all a lie. They were out to get them. We're living in a minor tyranny right now, and unless this government is stopped in its tracks, it's liable to become a major tyranny. Do you understand why I call the book Trickle Down Tyranny? Okay, what would you like to talk about? Did you know that Trayvon's mother patented the boy's name? The guy is dead, and they're trying to sell products based upon the child's name. Do you understand what's going on here? Do you think that Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson care a whit about justice? Don't you understand that this is a repeat of the Tawana Brawley case all over again? You don't understand any of this. Many of you don't even know who Tawana Brawley is. If I said to you, Detective Pagonis, you wouldn't know who it is. But you see, I have a memory like a steel safe. I store certain things in my memory, and when I need them, the names come back to me. I don't have to write them down. And I know...
Savage.
In incendiary times like this, it's good to have people of goodwill and with a historical basis to come onto radio to try and set the record straight. Now, before we talk again about this terrible situation of Trayvon Martin, who is dead, we all agree on one thing, which is that we wish he were alive. That's first of all. However, we are appalled that Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and many in the Democrat caucus would treat this tragedy as an advantage to themselves in many different ways. Fortunately, there's a man out there, at least one, of some prominence, who wants to see this stopped, and his name is C.L. Bryant, Reverend, the real Reverend, C.L. Bryant, real Reverend, real master's degree in theology, trained Baptist minister, pastor for 32 years. He is the author and independent filmmaker of a movie about the race to free the black community from the slavery of progressive policies, and that video is called Runaway Slave. Our guest is Reverend C.L. Bryant, who joins us now on the Savage Nation. Reverend, it's a real honor to have you on the show.
I'm glad to be with you, Dr. Savage. Thank you so much for having me on.
Now look, I don't want to give you any leading questions, and you know we all agree that the demagoguery of any kind is terrible, but in a situation like this where he is dead, I think we should leave this to the courts. I mean, you have said that Sharpton and Jackson should basically cool it. Isn't that your position?
Absolutely right. You see, as long as they can keep you angry and bitter and resentful about Kunta Kinte's foot being cut off, then they can control the emotional way that people behave and vote. And I have to tell you, Dr. Savage, I believe the end game to what Sharpton and Jackson are up against or trying to do is actually secure a voting bloc that was emotionally slipping away at this point in time.
Oh, so in other words, they're working for our president, is what you're saying?
this does have all the designs of someone who has an ulterior motive, and they're pimping and prostituting the family of this dead young man. Like vultures, they're circling his carcass and using it for their own personal aggrandizement.
So what you're suggesting is a much bigger picture than I saw, frankly, Reverend. You're saying that Obama has lost the passion of the black vote that he had back in 08 when he first appeared on the scene, and this is an attempt to galvanize them?
Absolutely, it is. The pain at the gas pumps, the pain of unemployment, the pain of people who, in fact, I think most of them would like to work, is beginning to wear on the black community just the way it is wearing on the rest of America. And the president coming out the other day saying that if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin. What was that about? I mean,
It was almost a bizarre statement for a number of reasons. One, because the president shouldn't have gotten involved in the case. Two, I don't understand the son reference. But number three, why is Sharpton taken seriously when he has a track record of lying and inciting riots? We can go all the way back to the Tawana Brawley case. There's the Freddie's Fashion Market case. Why is this man taken seriously?
And let's not forget Duke Lacrosse team that he wanted to drag through the mud for raping someone there at the college. He does have a negative track record. And when something like this happens, you can be certain that at least two faces will show up on the scene fanning the flames of racism. And they will be Al Sharpton. They will be Jesse Jackson. They are there to keep and to propagate a lie in this country that you are that black people are victims and they cannot overcome their circumstances.
You were the former head of the NAACP, is that correct?
Garland, Texas, back in the late 80s, I was the president of the Garland branch of the NAACP. Yes.
Well, all right. Well, that's still the NAACP before it became highly politicized. You know, there was a great black inventor who you know. I think it was George Washington Carver. He wrote something about people like Jackson and Sharpton, and he said that there is a certain type of black person who likes to keep grievances alive for their own personal gain. I'm paraphrasing poorly. But he saw it way back in the early 1900s. There were people doing the same thing that they're doing.
Absolutely. Dr. Savage, race has always been a very profitable thing in our country, unfortunately. But here we are in the year 2012, and we would think that we would have evolved into something else at this point in time. However, it still makes a lot of money for race hustlers and those on the progressive left who, in fact, would like to keep this type thing going. And so this is what we are doing in the movie Runaway Slave. We are telling people that it is time for us to flee this type of foolishness and run toward the blessings of liberty that are contained in our Constitution.
How do people download that movie, the Runaway Slave movie? Where do they get it?
We will be in theaters, Dr. Savage, around the country the 1st of June, 250 theaters we will be in. Mm. Go to runawayslavemovie.com, runawayslavemovie.com, and you can in fact see some of the trailers.
No, I'd like to see that. You know, going back to the Kobe Bryant case, of course, black basketball player, very prominent, very wealthy, falsely accused by a Rocky Mountain trash girl, which I called it like I saw it within 3 days. I was on the side of Kobe Bryant. About a week later or 2 weeks later, I went into a bar in San Francisco. And there were two young black guys, well-dressed, corporate type of guys. They came up to me and they said, "Are you Michael Savage?" "Yes." They said, "We want to buy you a drink for taking Kobe's side, that you were able to see this for what it was." I want people to understand that we all want this young man to have not been hurt, not to have been killed. But for God's sakes, the last thing America needs is to go back to the lynchings, the very lynchings that many unfortunate black people were subjected to. Certainly that's not what we want to see happen to Mr. Zimmerman, which the new Black Panthers seem to be egging on here.
You know, Dr. Savage, if you had called for the bounty on my head or any black person's head, being white, there would have been an uproar that would have smelled a high heaven. But the new Black Panthers, the liberal media gives them a pass on that. My grandfather told me this, Dr. Savage. He said, back in the 70s, when I was letting my hair grow a little bit longer and black power was the order of the day, he pulled me aside and he said, listen, I didn't go through what I went through so you could be black. I went through what I went through so you could be free.
Whoa.
Free to say what you want to say, free to go where you want to go, and free to associate with who you want to associate with, not so you could be black. And I have never forgotten those words.
Boy, your grandfather was a visionary. In other words, he was saying it wasn't about black power, it was about liberation, not about black power.
And Dr. Savage,
I never heard a story like that, truthfully. I never heard it put exactly like that. Now, tell us about your grandfather. He sounds like an extraordinary man. What was his job? What did he do?
He was a farmer, and if you wrote his name on the back of your wall, he could not have read it. He was not literate. In fact, the initial CL, I use that now because all of my foreparents, because my grandparents and great-grandparents were illiterate, they named the boy children by initials. And my name is Cleon Lewis, by the way, but just the same. My father had a third-grade education, taught himself to read right before he went into World War II, using the book Alice in Wonderland. And, of course, that book was written by Lewis Carroll. His initials were L.C., and so he used that name of Lewis Carroll for his name and gave himself a name. And so I use CL, and that I carry on that tradition.
That's amazing. That's a very, very touching story, to be very frank with you. You know, I hear stories of all kinds. I've been in radio 18 years. People come on, they go off. You forget them. I won't forget that story about your grandfather because it's interesting to me how a man of the earth, although illiterate, knew more than most of these microcephalics who go to Harvard and study the law.
Yes, yes, indeed. And I thank God that here in this country, I've been able to secure an education. My children have been able to do the very same thing. And the one thing I want to tell you is this, your listening audience, is that regardless of if you came here on the Mayflower, escaping the tyranny of King George, or whether you came here, your ancestors came here in slave ships and needed to escape the tyranny of the plantation, America has never offered guarantees to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
The slave, when he ran away from there trying to seek freedom, there was no guarantee that he would make it. The pilgrims were not guaranteed that they would survive the first winter. And so it's still a place of opportunity, but it's never been a place of guarantees.
Well, that's amazing because certainly under Obama, he wants to tell us that we are all guaranteed health care, automobiles, houses, free fuel, and whatever else. But Reverend Brian, you said something right at the outset that I don't want to forget. You said that this activism on the part of these race hustlers, if I may use that phrase without offending you, the race hustlers Sharpton and Jackson and others, by the way, in the Democrat Party and outside of it, are being used in order to stir up the black communities around America in order to get them activated to vote for Obama. Is that your main point at the beginning of this interview on the Savage Nation?
That is a large part of it. That is the end game. The end game is to refire emotions that rode Obama into office to begin with. But of course, initially, they want to make it appear as though they are here a month later to stand by the side of the parents of this young man who was slain. And truly, anyone of conscience, anyone of decency, definitely wants justice to prevail in this particular circumstance. But the one thing we do not want to sacrifice is civility and decency. And there is a decent and orderly way about going around and securing justice.
Are you in trouble since you've prominently come out on this case in the way you have as a black man yourself? I would expect the social pressure on you is overwhelming to have taken the lynch mob side. How has it been since you took the side of justice?
There is always blowback that will occur in the lives of people like myself. But I've paid my dues. from NAACP president, and of course, throughout my lifetime, I've been not only a minister and a pastor, but a missionary to foreign countries and different soils. And I've seen the ills that can happen when people lose focus on what's truly important, and that is being as good to a person as you would want them to be as good to you.
Reverend C.L. Bryan is the former president of the NAACP's Garland, Texas branch. Now listen to this. He now believes the values that he once vehemently upheld has led the black community into a state of bondage to the U.S. government. And he made a film, a movie, about the race to free the black race from the slavery of progressive policies. And that movie will be out in June. And what's the website again, Reverend?
RunawaySlaveMovie.com, RunawaySlaveMovie.com.
Well, I hope that people go to see that film and they come to their senses, and that Zimmerman is given a full trial, and if he's guilty of executing that young man, he is punished to the full extent of the law. But if, on the other hand, there was an altercation, that's quite a different story. I mean, the new evidence from witnesses is coming out, evidence such as they were in a fight. Martin punched him in the nose, he says. He was on the ground. He had his head smashed down. I read that the prosecutor in this case said he can't even win the case by the evidence he's seen in the police report.
Dr. Savage, this story is still evolving, and I encourage everyone to wait and see how this will end before we rush to judgment.
Thank God America has men like Reverend C.L. Bryan, people we never hear from. I'm so glad that you had a minute to join us today on the Savage Nation, and we look forward to your film, Runaway Slave, Reverend. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. Bye now.
48 minutes after the hour, this is the Savage Nation. If you care to comment on this tragic situation on both sides, we're open for business. The last vestige of the First Amendment is here on the airwaves. That's why talk radio is still the king of all media. 1-800-449-8255. We do something you cannot do with cable television. We do something you can't really do anywhere else in the way you do it, meaning using your heart and your soul and your mind. That is through your voice. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Just heard from a wonderful man, Reverend C.L. Bryant, former head of a chapter of the NAACP, who said, let's just wait for the trial on the Trevor Martin incident before we lynch this man. Now, of course, that's what we all believe to be right, the right way to go. We didn't say that Zimmerman is innocent. We didn't say Zimmerman is a hero. We didn't say Zimmerman should be given a pass. We said let it go to the courts and let the evidence come out. You know, that's how it works in a free society. But there's Al Sharpton, there's Jesse Jackson basically calling for a lynch mob, leading a lynch mob. You know, I just searched my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, for any reference to Al Sharpton. I didn't know if he made it into the book, and he did. It's in the Libya section. Did you know that? Let me read you a piece of this, because you probably don't know this about Sharpton. When the popular revolt against Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi began, Obama didn't know what to do. Many of his strongest supporters, like Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan and race hustler the Reverend Al Sharpton, were actually in favor of Gaddafi. I don't know if you know this. It's time for a savage history lesson, which includes the important points that the mainstream media leave out. That's on page 180 of Trickle Down Tyranny, my new book. But let's talk about this case. Let's talk about Obamacare. Let's talk about all the other news stories that are out there today, because things are heating up. They're not calming down. As we approach the election season in November, they're going to get even hotter. Florida, Ernie, you're up. Go ahead, please. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Listen, here's what my issue is. When Zimmerman was approached, or he had to check to this kid in front of him, under the stand your ground laws, if he felt intimidated by this kid, he had every right to use whatever force necessary. But the kid turned and walked away. The minute that kid turned and walked away, that de-escalated the issue. He actually became the aggressor when he started following this person. So ironically, if this kid turned around and actually threw a punch at him because he was fearful, he was standing his ground. because he was no longer.
You mean the poor kid who was shot? If he turned around and punched Zimmerman, then the kid who was shot was standing his ground?
Basically, when Zimmerman turned and started following the kid, he became the aggressor.
Okay. But the latest evidence that has come out, and I wasn't there, I mean, it's coming out through the media, is that what you said did occur, and then Zimmerman was retreating, and the other guy then followed him and punched him in the nose.
Well, that part I didn't hear, but I guess the tragedy there, I think, is that Zimmerman had the ambitions of being a cop and was probably playing cop, and it turned out real tragic because I think...
I totally agree with you, by the way. A lot of these neighborhood watch captains are wannabe cops. I agree with you on that, Ernie.
You know, so what I think actually happened was that it was tragic. I think what happened was the kid turned around, was scared of the guy. They ended up exchanging blows. The kid probably got the advantage on the guy fighting. The guy's got a gun. He's scared the kid's going to take the gun and shoot him with it, and he just acted irrationally.
I think that's probably closest to the truth by what I've seen. It looked to me like exactly the way you presented it, but the bottom line is, don't you think that we need a trial of law with evidence and
Trial. I think a trial is necessary, but in reality, I don't.
Well, there are Americans right now who want to hang Zimmerman. They're calling basically for a lynch mob.
The one thing I don't understand is why the federal government, the governor of Florida, has not gotten involved with the Panthers putting a price on this guy's head, because that is a federal offense. I mean, they're basically.
Well, there you go. Now, here's a man. Yeah, you are. There's a man who says you think Zimmerman is guilty in some way, and yet the Black Panthers are even, in their own way, guilty of a crime. Of course they are. Who gives them the right to become a law unto themselves? Well, that's the Obama Justice Department. But, Ernie, I'm going to send you Trickle Down Tyranny, my new book, because all week long now, anyone who gets on this show is going to get a free copy of the book. We've got to trigger a mob. We need a flash mob to go into bookstores next Tuesday, the day it's released. I want you to go in and clean the shelves out and send a message to Washington.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
His life will never be the same. He's living in seclusion. I don't know where he's at. I do know how to get in touch with him now, but I have no idea where he's at. He's being treated for post-traumatic stress syndrome, depression, insomnia. He can't eat. He cried for days after the shooting. He's extremely remorseful. And now he's living in hiding because he has become the scapegoat for what ails this country as far as racial relations go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are here today to discuss a matter that never should have happened. I think it's one of those matters that if we had a better understanding and more laws on racial profiling, that this never would have happened.
So there's the case, the tragedy of Trevor Martin. Before we begin, Trayvon Martin, that were held today on Capitol Hill, of course, by those who were trying to turn straw into gold. In the last hour, Cecile Bryant on the show, the former head of a chapter of the NAACP of Garland, Texas, who said that men like Sharptongue and Hijackson are doing a grave disservice to America and especially to the Black community trying to enslave them. So there are both sides of this story, and people are taking sides. The bottom line here is that we all wish that this didn't happen. Let's start with that. We all wish that Trayvon Martin were alive, don't we? There's no one saying he deserves to be dead. Nobody is saying that. However, the lynch mobs being incited by the New Black Panthers, Jesse High Jackson, Reverend Al Sharptongue, and the Democrat Party itself are the real issues of today. Those are the real issues of today that people would want to drag America backwards rather than let us live in peace and harmony. You take a guy like Sharpton, he's the Rumpelstiltskin of the black community, trying at every turn to turn straw into gold for himself and for others. There's no question about that. Everybody sees this, and they're sick of it. But again, before we go on to taking your calls on this horrible situation, I'd like to say again, so I'm not misinterpreted, that we all wish this young man were alive, okay? Let's start with that. You know, every morning I wake up, and you know what I have to ask myself? What is the relevance of my radio show? Why should I do a radio show today? Why should millions of people a week listen to the Savage Nation? What am I going to provide for them that they can't get on the internet or they can't get somewhere else? And you know what the answer is? It's a safe place to go to discuss ideas. It's as simple as that. I have a bias. I admit it. Unlike CNN, which pretends it's a news organization when it's an outlet for the Obama administration, I don't pretend that I don't have a bias. I am a proud independent and a proud conservative American. I am a proud patriot who believes in borders, language, and culture. Let me be very clear about that. And I lay it out at the beginning of the show, in the middle of the show, at the end of the show. I don't hide it. I don't pretend to be fair and balanced, because nobody is fair and balanced. Everybody in the media is subjective one way or the other. They're all injecting their own viewpoint onto the situation. But I don't think there's a listener listening to this show right now in this situation who thinks that a lynch mob is something that America should want today. And yet you see a man like Sharptongue with a disastrous history of inciting race hatred in this country. Jackson, who had disappeared for months, not seen for months, suddenly popping up like a mushroom after the rain, again trying to incite one person against another, brother against brother, in an attempt to relive the Civil War for their own personal gain. It's frightening that this would go on. But to see the president himself say, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin, which was shocking for a president to inject himself into a situation without knowing the facts. Now, when this case first came along, I, like many of you, believed that Zimmerman was just simply a hunter of people, and he hunted this black kid and shot him in cold blood. That's what it looked like to me. Saw a black kid, didn't like him, said you're trouble, provoked him and shot him. That's what it looked like at the outset. But now, as more facts are coming out, and we hear there are witnesses saying that there was an altercation, and that the poor dead kid had punched Zimmerman in the nose and then struck his head against the ground, and Zimmerman's head had shown lacerations on the front and on the back. Now you start to say this is a more complex situation than before. It's a murder trial. This is a homicide one trial. This is not a trial by the vermin in the media, is it? I'll take your calls right now on the Savage Nation. By the way, everyone who gets on this show from today through all of next week is going to be a winner of my brand new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, which hits the bookstores next Tuesday. Robert, you're the first up on the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please. Welcome to the program.
No lynch mob here. Just a man with a couple questions. If Zimmerman had a broken nose and the cops show up, here's a dead man on the ground, some other guy with a busted nose bleeding, how come there's no documentation of it? And number
Wait, hold on. What do you mean no documentation of what?
Of the broken nose. What do you do with a broken nose? You just take your gun and go home?
Well, apparently the police report says he had a broken nose and lacerations on the back of his head.
Oh. Then that clarifies it for me.
Yeah, that's the police report, but of course you wouldn't read that in the New York Times or even the New York Post. They omitted that for the first 3 days. They wanted you to see Zimmerman as a racist hunter of black people.
My second point would be, all the photographs you see of the victim is a young man and all, but in actuality he was 6'3" at 17. So he was a much
That's right. The pictures that the vermin in the media were running were him as a middle school child. Not as the poor guy who was in the altercation, who was 6'1", and although 17, the size of a large man. That is correct. They kept showing the same picture of him as a young, young child in middle school. Shocking, isn't it, that the media would lie to you?
Well, we don't want an oxbow incident here where we hang the wrong people. You know?
Well, I'm glad that you see it for what it is in a historic context, but I'm sending you a copy of my brand-new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, for daring to come on the show. 1-800-449-8255. Let us go to Albany, New York. From Manhattan, we drive up the Hudson Valley right to Albany. Frank, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for answering my call. Yeah, my views on this thing is that this is almost like a gift to the left, because they're going to turn this issue that's kind of a racial issue basically into a Second Amendment rights issue and a defend yourself issue.
Absolutely. Well, Bloomberg already did that. Mayor Bloomberg already tried to turn it into a gun story.
Yeah, well, so I was listening to the radio on somebody else's show one time, and they were saying that the governor of Florida has to get involved in this, and he's the one that instated this law, and why doesn't he do something about it, and, you know, stuff like that. That's basically the way it's heading right now.
Well, I suspect that you're right, that the Stand Your Ground law will be challenged anew, and that it will show, I think that the evidence will show that the Stand Your Ground law has saved many, many more lives than it has cost of innocent lives. It has greatly deterred crime in Florida, greatly. You ask any of the police in Florida, and they will tell you that. The police are totally in favor of the Stand Your Ground law. In fact, if we had a Stand Your Ground law throughout the 50 states, there would be less murder, not more murder. You're going to win a copy of my brand new book, Trickle Down Tyranny. Stay on the line. They're going out to you in a day or two. 1-800-449-8255. Now let's go to the area where this occurred. That is an area in Florida. Manny, in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Like you, I've had trouble sleeping, and I've also been a lover of dogs, and that's why I, you know, walk around my neighborhood late at night with my dog. And, you know, I'm very, very communal person. I know everybody in my building, live in a condominium, a large condominium area. And I've actually caught people breaking into cars. And, you know, mind you, people say, oh, he's a poor kid, and they're showing pictures of this little baby. But then you look at some of the Facebook pictures and the other pictures of this guy coming out. And when I see those pictures, growing up in the neighborhood I grew up in a very rough neighborhood, in what some people would call like a ghetto or a bad neighborhood, this guy, the way he carries himself would be the way I would recognize him as somebody who would be looking for trouble. Now, I've had kids attack me because I caught two kids breaking into a car. They actually rushed at me. What they didn't see, because it's very dark around the area, was my dog. He's a pit bull. Pretty much solid black, and when they got close enough, they, you know, they saw him. They stopped in their tracks, but then you could see that they actually thought about going to continue to hurt me, and that's when I drew my weapon. But and that's when they fled. But I've actually
now, wait, Manny, are you a neighborhood watch captain yourself, or just a citizen in Florida with the right to carry?
I'm just a citizen in Florida with the right to carry. I'm an ex-Marine.
Hold on. I know the law in Florida. You're not allowed to carry a concealed weapon unless you have a license.
I do have a license, sir.
How did you get the license to carry? I'm curious, in Florida.
Oh, okay. Well, you have to go to a class. You go through all the laws.
I understand. I wanted to make sure because I do know how you do it. So you do have a license to conceal and carry, a conceal and carry permit. You're walking your dog at night, black pit bull. You got punks running around breaking into cars. They see you. They don't like you looking at them. They rush you. Then they see your dog. They come to a dead stop. Did you pull your gun on them?
Yes, I did. And I called the police. The police were actually surprised that I didn't shoot them. Honestly, I was able to see that there was nothing in their hands. But me, I'm actually a disabled veteran. The dog I have is a service dog. I have a traumatic brain injury. I mean, I've had like concussions. I have 3 crushed vertebrae in my lumbar. I have nerve damage in my right arm. A lot of people don't realize you could kill somebody with your bare hands. It's really not that hard. I mean, if you get knocked out, one swift kick to the temple, and you know, you're a goner.
With all of your injuries, are they war related, Manny? I'm curious.
Yes, they are.
So you're a disabled vet, you carry a gun, but why are you walking around in the middle of the night? Is it because you can't sleep? Is that what you said?
Yeah, unlike you, Dr. Savage, the T's really never worked for me. walking around late at night, I read a lot at night as well, and that's what helps really, put me to sleep.
No, I agree with you. Walking at night is actually very calming. It's just a little dangerous, as you just told us, Manny. And, there's as much danger in the streets of America as there was in Kabul. I mean, I don't know where you were stationed. You got guys coming back from overseas who got killed here, who lived through every kind of bombing you could imagine. My suggestion, Manny, is get a home gym of some kind and work out on a treadmill. I'm going to send you a copy of my brand new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, Manny. Thank you for your service to the country. The time is 18 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Savage Nation. The phone number, if you call this number, you can join this conversation. Do you have an opinion on this murder in Florida? Do you have an opinion on Obamacare? Do you have an opinion on any other news story of the day? Well, we're open for business at 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
America went through a terrible civil war. How many thousands were butchered, My producer, Beowulf, is quite knowledgeable about history, and he said, you got to look at the Matthew Brady pictures of Civil War dead. And during the break, I went through some of them. I mean, it's horrible to look at war dead to begin with, but you think about it, the Civil War, we're talking about 1860, 65, 18 in that era. We're now 150 years after it, and here a situation comes along, and you've got race mongers running around trying to stir up races against each other, trying to cause another civil war. What in the world can be gained by turning race against race? What can be gained by creating such hatred? And that's why I say if we had a legitimate leadership in this country, the president would not have come out and said that if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin. What he would have said was, this is a time for cooler heads to prevail. This is a time for a trial. Let all the facts come out before we jump to judgment. Let us not lynch Zimmerman before we hear all of the facts. That's what a leader should have done. But we all know that Obama is not a leader. He is a demagogue. He is a demagogue at every turn, even in a situation as horrendous as this. There he was, again, making this a mistake, permitting the door to open for the Al Sharptongues, the Jesse Hijacksons, the new Black Panthers, and the other race hustlers in this country who live off dissension and hatred. Live off it. Sacramento, Dan, do you agree or disagree? Is it time for a trial instead of a lynching?
I would say, legally it all comes down to this, a pretty simple notion, actually, and that was Zimmerman in reasonable fear for his life at that time. All the stuff.
Now hold, wait, up. Let's stop. You say at that time. That let's say he provoked the altercation. Does that have a mitigating circumstance attached to in fear for his life at that time?
Well, if what the witness said was true, none of us were there. But if
none of us know, but now we're hearing witnesses say that. Okay, let's start from the top. Zimmerman, neighborhood watch captain, is trailing a black guy with a hood. Okay. The black guy gets incensed because he wasn't doing anything wrong. He turns around and says, you got a problem. He then punches Zimmerman, Zimmerman retreats. Trevor Martin follows him and gives him a blindside punch, hits him in the head, gets him on the ground, starts pounding his head. So who's right and who's wrong?
That to me legally sounds like reasonable fear. If someone's pounding your head into concrete, that you can die.
Of course you can die, but did he provoke it? Did Zimmerman provoke the fight?
May have provoked it, but then he was walking away, and then Trayvon came back. It could have been diffused before that, far before that. But, once the guy came back and then started beating the guy up, knocked him out and with one blow, and then started pounding his head into the concrete, into the sidewalk, that's why the police didn't arrest him, because that was corroborated. Now, I'm not saying...
Yeah, well, and by the way, this is very important. People don't even realize the police report states Zimmerman had a broken or a bleeding from the nose and lacerations on the back of his head. I read that the prosecutor yesterday said he does not have enough evidence to convict Zimmerman of any crime.
There's no reasonable fear, then it's manslaughter.
Well, Dan, it sounds like you're very legalistically oriented. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Down Tyranny for your reading education. and I'd like you to tell us what you think of it next week. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The big loser here in the Trayvon Martin case is, of course, the parents of the young guy. He's dead. No matter what happened, he's dead. That's number one. So their hearts are broken. Nobody wants their child to be hurt. The second biggest loser here is the U.S. media. They've lost whatever semblance of respect, even if there was a scintilla of respect in the American public's mind, it's all gone. When you see rats of the kind we see, the gutter rats, stirring up racial hatred like this, sending out misinformation from day one on this fact, you understand they've lost all credibility. And the third biggest loser is Obama himself for having injected himself into the situation without knowing all the facts. This is, a fact of reality here. You know, at the same time I'm dealing with all of this and you're listening to the show and I really appreciate it, my birthday is Saturday night. I'm having a party for about 45, 50 friends. A little thing. I'm not doing this for any reason. I'm not selling anything. So I'm saying, well, okay, I've got to give some kind of little speech. That's what they expect from a talk show host. So I'm saying, well, okay, in Italian they say Cinzano, so I'm not Italian. So I have to look up other ways that they say happy birthday to people in different cultures. So I found Russian birthday toasts. You ready for this? Some of them are terrible. The translation is poor. And the best one is at the last one. It says, we drink to your coffin. May it be built from the wood of a 100-year-old oak tree that I shall plant tomorrow. That I like. I like that one. May you live to be 100 years with one extra year to repent. You know, I think about this. Would I want to live to the age of Moses? I mean, the Russians say, the Italians say Cinzano, 100 years. Okay, we know that. So then the Jewish people say, may you live to the age of Moses, who lived allegedly to 120. Of course, well, he didn't do so well at the end either. I mean, with 100 wives. But the question is, would you really want to live to 120? Now, with Obamacare, there's a chance you will. You'll be playing backgammon and smoking cigars from Cuba. You won't be making a living anymore. You'll be driving 2010 Hondas in the year 2050 or 2060, because that's all that will be left in the country, since the health care will take up the entire economy. You'll be playing checkers. You'll be smoking Cuban cigars. You'll be living in a decrepit house that's falling apart, where if you had a spare bedroom, it's now filled with illegal aliens and their offspring, because you don't want to waste any rooms. See, that's the future of America if we don't stop this tyranny, frankly. And it goes right back to the big issue of the day, which is the Obamacare mandate. I don't understand why I should pay for somebody else's health care, do you? Why should I pay for another man's health care? Where in the world should I? First of all, the taxation that I pay pays for it. Let's start with that. Every illegal alien in this country has a gold-plated healthcare system already. You ask any doctor or nurse, I've been in emergency rooms with my own problems last year, they're catered to. Translators, doctors, nurses, Mr. This, Mr. That, you know, I know what they get. The doctors are sick of them. The doctors are sick of the illegal aliens, primarily from Mexico, flooding into the hospitals and destroying the medical system in this country. So now they want me to pay for them straight up? Okay, so they bankrupted the hospitals in the border states. Now they want to bankrupt the hospitals throughout America by providing health care for everyone. Who's going to pay for it? You can't have a gold-plated health care system for all without bankrupting the nation. Who is going to pay for it? How smart do you have to be to understand this? How do you I don't understand how people could even argue this. Where's the money supposed to come from? You say, well, tax the rich. They got plenty of money. Well, I would say cut out the corporate loopholes. Let's start with General Electric, which I point out in great detail in my new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, how much they earn. They paid zero taxes. They got a tax credit. They have something like 1,200 tax lawyers. Obama permits them to get away without paying taxes. You know, billions of dollars of income and no taxes is kind of insulting, isn't it? How do they get away with it? How does Microsoft and Bill Gates get away with paying such low taxes? There are many corporations that pay almost no taxes or low taxes. Why don't you start by eliminating the loopholes for these corporations instead of making the average guy pay for illegal aliens' health care, is what I say. So you want to talk about that topic? We can talk about that topic. If you have a birthday toast for me, for the speech I'm going to give, and I'll record it and run it on the show. We drink your coffin, may be built from the wood of a 100-year-old oak tree that I shall plant tomorrow. That whole thing. All right, then you're starting with the coffins. You have to be Russian to even say a thing like that. Americans don't even like the word cough. If you say kuh, if you get even near the word, they get intimidated. They reach for Valium. Unless you're saying coffee. You could say my coffee. You can't say my coffin. People don't even want to think. Do you ever think about it? Am I the only one who's been morbid all my life? I've been morbid since I'm 5 years old. I've had a morbid sense of, I'm a morbid personality at the end of it. Say, how come you're so funny sometimes? Because I think it takes a morbid sense of humor in order to survive in this world. Do you know that? Morbidity is very important to remember. We all come from the dust and we all return to the dust. And by the way, do you know where the word humble comes from? Say to a man, hey, come on, you know, you're not humble enough. You know, the word humble comes from the same root word as humus. Humus, humble, the earth. And so what people mean when they say to a man who's arrogant is that you ought to be humble, is what they're saying to him is you ought to remember that you come from the earth and you're returning to the earth, basically. Basically, you're just molecules. So don't try to act like you're God himself. I mean, that's what the word humble really means. So anyway, I'm getting off the topic, or am I getting on to the topic now? 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to my website. I found some stories there that are worth talking about. You know, on the bottom left, you talk about positive. There's a picture of a man whose face was literally blown off by a gunshot, and he had a face transplant. He was living as a recluse behind the mask. You're never going to believe the picture of this man before and after what doctors have performed. It's the first full face transplant where they took a dead man's jaw bones and upper and lower teeth and tongue and sewed them into this poor man's skull, if you can believe it. Go take a look at the miracles of modern surgery on michaelsavage.com. You say, well, there's hope. I mean, there's hope. Modern medicine is astounding, which leads us right back to Obamacare. You think I should be paying for octuplets from India to be born in America? How many times have you seen people come here from the third world? They spend millions of dollars on surgery. Say, oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, who paid for it? You did. Your premiums went up. Your premiums went up. I mean, when do we stop paying for everybody's Mercedes healthcare system is the question. What would you like to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. We can move on past the Martin case if you'd like to. We can talk about other topics. Here's another one. This one comes out of England, where Obamacare is already practiced on a daily basis. Woman died after Muslim nurse refused to help as he was praying. A woman in England was left on the floor needing the help of a nurse in a hospital in England where Obamacare is the law. The nurse was a Muslim who was on his prayer rug, and he wouldn't leave the prayer rug to help her, and she died. How's that? Does that work for you? Then for those of you who are animal lovers, as I am, there's a heartbreaking picture, but maybe it'll do some good. It is one of the best stories I've seen on the subject. Deadly racetracks, mangled horses, maimed jockeys. And it shows a beautiful quarter horse whose leg was just broken in a race, euthanized on the track and thrown into a garbage barrel. It could rip your... I mean, this is astounding to see this, but you say, well, how often does it happen? Very often. It happens too often. The new economics of racing are making an always dangerous game even more so, as lax oversight puts animal and rider at risk. It's a fabulous story from the New York Times from yesterday. Death and disarray in America's racetracks. I put it up on Michael Savage for you to look at. And it shows this picture. A 2-year-old quarter horse named Teller All Gone broke a front leg in a race on September 3rd at Ruidoso Downs Racetrack in New Mexico and was euthanized. His body was then dumped in a junkyard next to an old toilet, a short walk from where he had been sold at auction the previous year. You hear this? Wait, it's even worse than that. The jockeys themselves are getting killed and maimed. You hear this? 19 seconds later, under brilliant blue sky, a national champion jockey named Jackie Martin lay sprawled in the furrowed dirt just past the finish line, paralyzed, his neck broken in three places. On the ground next to him, his frightened horse, leg broken and chest heaving, was minutes away from being euthanized on the track. For finishing fourth on this early September day last year, Jackie Martin got about $60 and possibly a lifetime tethered to a respirator. The next day, it nearly happened again. At virtually the same spot, another horse broke a front leg, pitching his rider head first into the ground. The jockey escaped injury, but not the 2-year-old horse, Teller, all gone. He was euthanized and then dumped near an old toilet in a junkyard, a short walk from where he had been sold at auction the previous year. Now, if you read the story, you come to understand why this is happening. And they look at the incidence of accidents and deaths in horses in America at various tracks and, of course, around the world. And apparently we have one of the highest death rates or incident rates in the world. In England, for example, it's pretty low because they're not allowed to use drugs on their horses. Arizona has a high rate. California has a very high rate. 635 deaths, drug positives out of them, 296. So California is very lax, believe it or not, even though the nanny state exists here. But you go down the list and you see states where they really test horses for drugs and the accident rates are much lower. See, what they're doing is they're doping them up with pain medication so they can run one more race. And then they break a leg because they don't even know what they're feeling, the poor animals. And either their heart stops or their legs break. And then the horse dies. And then they throw them into a garbage tree, a garbage dump, like so much horse meat. And it's a fab. Look, I don't know what are you going to say of a thing like this? What should you say? Well, the answer is there should be laws against it, of doping up a horse, or there should be better supervision. But saying a thing like that makes no sense, because there won't be, because the racing industry is quite powerful, and they're going to prevent the government from doing anything about it. Georgia, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, we're being swept into a vortex by the left's manipulation of this poor young man's death in Florida.
Right.
This is a parallel in many ways to the 1930s in Germany, when a young man who belonged to the Nazi Party, and I'm not saying this anything about this child, I'm just saying there was somebody who was killed by the communists, and the Nazis turned it into a big cause. The kid's name was Horst Wessel, and he was turned.
Oh, the Horst Wessel song, I know. Well, come on, that's a pretty big stretch, because Trayvon Martin was not political. He didn't belong to the Democrat Party. In fact, George Zimmerman, the guy who shot him, was a registered Democrat. I understand what you're saying in one sense, but it's a dangerous road to go down. You understand, Mike, because people are going to say you're exaggerating it and using it for your own political gain. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I understand that. There are two issues, though. There's the event, the crime or no crime that resulted in that young man's death. That is one thing. But how it's being manipulated by the left is
all you got to do is say Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson were there, and you know the whole thing is disgusting. Everybody in America knows that these are the two of the worst people in the history of the country. They make everybody's flesh crawl. Nobody has respect for them. Do you know anybody, even black people, who respect these two characters?
I have several very close friends who are black, and they don't even think about them.
No, they're irrelevant. They're relics of the 1960s. And yet, every time there is a tragedy between races, they pop up trying to turn dross into gold. And people are disgusted by them. In fact, there is a law against screaming fire in a crowded theater. And when a thing like this happens, that is a theater that's on fire. And to throw gasoline on it should be a felony. As far as I am concerned, it should be a felony to go down there and try to stir up racial hatred and cause another civil war.
I believe they're inciting riot.
Well, so do I. Thank God the riot hasn't occurred yet. And I'm sending you my new book. What is it called? And you'll get a copy. I think I'm going to make people say it.
Trickle down tyranny.
You win. You see, that's it. I'm going to have to make everyone work for it this week. Because what you know, people, what they don't, they get for nothing. If it's too easy, they don't respect it. So, guys, remember the book, Trickle Down Tyranny, because today and every other day of this week, if you get on the Savage Nation, you're going to get a free copy, only if you can say it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, I have a real surprise for you. During the break, we had a call from... Well, I'm not going to tell you who's on the air. You're not going to believe it. You're listening to the Savage Nation, and I was pleasantly surprised to receive a call from this gentleman. Milton from North Carolina, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Dr. Savage? How are you doing, my dear brother?
I hear that you are a former, a current member of the great rock and roll group, The Platters.
Well, a former member, but I'm currently booking myself now as The Golden Platter. And
I love it. Now, your song, Only You and the Great, your songs, I grew up on many of them, Only You and the Great Pretender. My dad used to play them on the car radio as I sat in the right seat on the way into work in a store. And boy, do I remember those songs. So, Milton, you're calling for what reason today?
Well, I understand you got a special day. Is today your birthday?
No, it's coming up Saturday, March 31st. But nevertheless, today is as good as any day if you got something for me.
Yeah, I got something for you, my friend. I've been listening to you for about the last 5 years, and I appreciate you. I feel you, brother, and you do defend for me and protect me, my rights and everything, and the rights of people here in America. And you're
wow.
a great asset and a great voice for us with no voice.
Oh, my God. You know, I tell you, a call like this makes my day, my year, my decade for being in radio, Milton.
Yes.
Because, as I say, we never hear from people out there. You know, we argue, we agree, disagree. But it never gets that personal. And coming from, you know what it is, Milton? It's a generational thing. You and I are from the same generation when I think people were, in many ways, much more civil with each other of different races. Am I right about that?
You are right on point, Michael. Right on point.
But so, Milton, are you gonna sing me a few bars of Only You?
Man, you know I got to lay it on you. I got to put it on you because you're so deserving.
All right, we're all ears. The Savage Nation. Okay, get ready. Here's The Golden Platter, Milton Bullock of The Platters, singing Only You for Me.
Only you can make all this world seem right. Only you can make the darkness bright. Only you and you alone can thrill me like you do and fill my heart with love for only you.
You are the man. I remember that song. Milton, how do you do this? How do you hold it up like that, man?
Well, I'm 73 years old, and I'm still hanging, still doing it.
Hey, Milton, are you in North Carolina? I wish you could come out to my party Saturday night. I'll pay all your expenses.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. No, if I could pull this off and get tickets and whatnot, maybe you want to come to my little party and sing for my friends and have a drink with us. Would you consider that, Milton?
Man, consider it done if we can pull it off, and that would be a beautiful surprise. Because
can you imagine if that happened? Because I was thinking of getting like a guitarist or that, but none of it mattered to me. I mean, there's certain music that touches me, and this is some of it. I'll tell you, Milton, give Beowulf your email address, and I'll get in touch with you tonight.
All right, my friend.
Maybe I'll see you Saturday night at Michael Savage's birthday party.
Well, you never know. God bless you, Michael.
This is coming on a night like this is very important for me for obvious reasons. We've been talking about it, a terrible situation of the Trayvon Martin case. Obviously, there are racial overtones, undertones, intones, outtones, my tone, half tone, full tone, you know, the cleft tones, and everybody understands that. And here I am as a white guy trying to deal with an incendiary case in a way that makes sense without getting people angry, with trying to say, cool it, let's have a trial. Not easy to do, okay? And out of the blue, God answers my prayers. And this gentleman, Milton Bullock, who I never spoke with, we didn't call him, from the Platters, from the 50s, Only You, the Great Pretender, calls my show. Can you believe this? Can you believe what life is like? Life is full of surprises. Do you understand this? And I want you to surprise me Tuesday. You want to give me a birthday present? Go into that bookstore and buy Trickle Down Tyranny. Do it for yourself.
Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You have to listen to some of this audio, including, sadly, GOP frontrunner Mitt Romney back in 07 saying he believes that man is responsible for global warming. It's awful.
I believe we're seeing global warming. The scientists suggest we are, and I believe that human activity contributes to it. I don't know how much the global warming is due to our activity. I just don't know that answer.
And you have to listen to President Obama making light of the open mic gaffe where he said that he's going to be reelected, and then he'll cater to Russia.
Well, first of all, are the mics on? I think everybody understands that if they haven't been listening to my speeches, I want to reduce our nuclear stockpiles. And so this is not a matter of hiding the ball. I'm on record. I made a speech about it to a whole bunch of Korean university students yesterday. I want to see us, over time, gradually, systematically, reduce reliance on nuclear weapons.
Finally, you need to listen to Justice Alito during the health care arguments today before the Supreme Court.
General Verrilli, today you're arguing that the penalty is not a tax. Tomorrow you're going to be back and you'll be arguing that the penalty is a tax.
Of course, today on the Savage Nation, we've had many guests, which we should tell you about again, including Reverend C.L. Bryant, who is the former head of the NAACP. Before the NAACP became a radical progressive organization. He is the son of a World War II veteran, and the fact of the matter is he has a master's degree in theology as opposed to a fake degree in theology from a cardboard box that Al Sharpton seems to have. He is the independent filmmaker of the documentary Runaway Slave, a movie about the race to free the black community from the slavery of progressive policies. You hear that? C.L. and his wife of 36 years, Jane, have 4 children and 8 grandchildren. Fabulous man. You won't be seeing him on the major media. In the sound department today, we've had Zimmerman's friend, Joe Oliver, defending him, saying he was trying to do the right thing.
He was doing the right thing. And here's the biggest problem with him having a gun, was the portrayal that you just presented. You made it sound like he's stalking him with a gun. And when the evidence comes out, everybody's going to find out that that is so far from the truth. There's a lot of things that I would love to say, but this is George's life, and it's his call on what is, can, and can't be said.
The parents of Trayvon Martin went to Capitol Hill demanding racial profiling and the hate crimes be applied, etc. Well, what else can I expect? We don't live in the same world.
Thank you for the support. As I said before, and I'll say it again, Trayvon was our son, but Trayvon is your son.
That's right.
A lot of people can relate to our situation, and it breaks their heart just like it breaks mine. Thank you for everything.
Also, I would like to say thank you to everyone who's supportive of our family, everyone who's helped us stand tall in this matter. Everyone who's holding the legacy of Trayvon and making sure that he did not indeed die in vain. I'd just like to say thank you. And he's sadly missed, and we'll continue to fight for justice for him.
We have Supreme Court Judges Scalia and Ginsburg questioning during oral arguments Obamacare, with, of course, Ginsburg taking the straight socialist communist party line.
Tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I thought a major, major point of your argument was that the people who don't participate in this market are making it much more expensive for the people who do. That is, they will get, a goodly number of them will get services that they can't afford at the point when they need them. And the result is that everybody else's premiums get raised. So you're not, it's not your your free choice just to do something for yourself. What you do is going to affect others, affect them in a major way.
Why do you define the market that broadly? Health care. It may well be that everybody needs health care sooner or later, but not everybody needs a heart transplant. Not everybody needs a liver transplant.
That's correct, but you never know whether you're going to
Could you
that
define
person.
The market? Everybody has to buy food sooner or later, so you define the market as food. Therefore, everybody's in the market. Therefore, you can make people buy broccoli.
It looks to me like this is going to be knocked down because the middle of the road of Kennedy, who often decides the split court's course, said today, he says, it seems to me that our tradition has been that you do not have the duty to rescue someone. And here the government is saying that the individual must act. Okay, so I don't know. To me, it's clearly unconstitutional, which I wrote about in Trickle Up Poverty. Read the Schechter case again if you own the book. Sotomayor and Kagan, two justices who were not qualified at any speed, of course, took the Obama party line. We dismissed their comments out of hand. Then, of course, I read another liberal. Came out today that Minnesota nonprofits received $440,000 of Obama money to oppose the Keystone Pipeline. Can you believe this? Well, you better believe it because it's happening right in front of your eyes. What else is in the news? Well, Obamacare is under fire. Trayvon protesters have ransacked the store. House Dems are trying to politicize this tragedy. Zimmerman, the shooter, was a registered Democrat. The poor kid who was killed, a tweet from him was found where someone said to him, "You ain't telling me you swung in a bus driver." He had multiple suspensions from school, marijuana, graffiti, possession of a burglary tool and jewelry. It's unbelievable. They've turned him into a little innocent kid. Look, he should be alive. But Zimmerman is saying Trayvon decked him with one blow and was banging his head on the sidewalk when he shot him in self-defense. Don't tell that to Al Sharpton. Gingrich begins charging $50 for photos. I don't know whether that's before or after dinner. I think that after dinner the photo would be more because he's larger. And the way Gingrich thinks, more costs more. So if he gains weight, you pay a dollar more for a picture of him after dinner than you do before. JetBlue captain went berserk on a flight, started screaming, had to be taken down by passengers. How do you like that? How do you like that one? I mean, the world, it's crazy. What's going on in this world? The captain went crazy on a plane, was trying to break into the cockpit from outside, and passengers had to subdue a captain? Yep. But you can't blame that one on Obama, can you?
Oh, captain, my captain.
And there may be some way that we can probably blame this on Obama, right? We could something. The stress of flying under Obama, I don't know, whatever.
I think I hear a Fox News alert coming.
Oh, you're joking, of course.
Of course, yes.
MichaelSavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, where borders, language, and culture are displayed every day. Hear Michael Savage talk about the most important book I've ever written. It's coming next week, Trickle Down Tyranny. You want to hear a soundbite for free? Why I think you should buy it? Go to MichaelSavage.com. Trayvon's mother trademarks her son's name. Merchandise is hitting stands throughout Florida. How's that? I don't know if Sharpton put out a special tongue depressor yet with the name on it, but I wouldn't doubt if him and Jackson aren't working with a novelty company to put out a tongue depressor. Ex-head of the NAACP rips Al Sharpton and Jesse on Trayon. They're using this child as the bait to inflame racial passions. Good for him. Take a guess who's running CIA's counterterrorism center. He's a convert to Islam. What? You heard me. He's a convert to Islam. 1-800-449-8255. What about the American people? Two-thirds oppose some or all of Obamacare. San Francisco, an anti-Obama protest far outdrew any Occupy event. It was ignored by the vermin in the media. Obama requests $770 million to fight warming overseas. What else? Two British soldiers shot in the back by an Afghan army gunman. No riots over that one. There should be riots in England, don't you think? Oh, can't have those. Firm tied to Harry Old Reed. wants $5 billion in a federal loan for a train to Vegas, if you can believe this. Train to Vegas? Train to Vegas? They won't just drive there? They'd rather go on a train? On the bottom of Michael Savage is a heartbreaking picture of a dead horse. The poor baby broke his leg. He was euthanized and thrown in a garbage pit. Deadly racetracks, mangled horses, maimed jockeys. The new economics of horse racing. They're drugging and doping the horses. I think the jockeys are being doped up. They're being thrown repeatedly because the stress is so great on them. But the picture of this dead horse, this beautiful animal, is something for every animal lover to take a look at. In England, a British woman died because a Muslim nurse refused to help her because he was praying to Allah. The elderly woman was left on the floor begging for help in a hospital now. But the Muslim nurse wouldn't leave his prayer rug to do his job. Isn't diversity great? Yeah. Isn't multiculturalism terrific? All this and more on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
First of all, are the mics on? I think everybody understands that if they haven't, they haven't been listening to my speeches. I want to reduce our nuclear stockpiles. And so this is not a matter of hiding the ball. I'm on record. I made a speech about it to a whole bunch of Korean university students yesterday. I want to see us, over time, gradually, systematically, reduce reliance on nuclear weapons.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better? Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com. I went on to a mountain this morning. I normally bicycle in the morning, not early, late in the morning, after I've done all my emails and had the breakfast and calculated how much cholesterol versus how much fish oil versus how much vitamin E versus how many milligrams of this and milligrams of that. Before I've titrated my body ready for another day on the slopes of America, then I go out in a bike ride, but I didn't want to ride today. I'm bored out of my mind. So I hiked up a mountain in the San Francisco Bay Area because it's eerily like a very, very spring day here. There's no rain. There's a terrible drought. People are enjoying the weather naturally, and myself included. And so I go up to an eerily quiet mountain in the Bay Area and hike by myself. And I look at the rocks, and I try to say to myself, Michael, you're a trained scientist. You're in the media, which is a pretty low-life job to begin with. You try to elevate the dialogue to a certain extent in what you do. You don't succeed, obviously, because the people only want to hear the mud. They don't want to hear about anything above the mud, the layer at the bottom of the ocean. They want to lay with the crustaceans, because apparently the politicians today are like crustaceans. Zero leadership. And I look at this, and I realize that the rocks I'm looking at on top of this mountain, these bluish rocks, were a result of a cataclysm that began about 165 million years ago. And they were thrown up into the air, onto the surface of the earth at that time, onto the top of this mountain. You say, well, wait, now you're getting off the track. Now you're talking about serpentine rocks on the top of a mountain. What does that have to do with Newt Gingrich and the election and Obama the communist? Well, I don't know what it has to do with it. I mean, you know, you ask yourself, if you're in this business, try to put some perspective on this. You have one gang of interests versus another gang of interests. They're called Democrat gang, Republican gang. You have two competing philosophies as to how the economy should be run. One gang says, take from everybody who earns and gives it to the non-earners. Tax those who work and don't tax those who earn very little. The other people say, wait a minute, that's not fair. But fundamentally, there's no difference in them socially. So now we have Newt Gingrich, who claims to be a conservative, claiming that a fiscal conservative candidate is bad. So what does he want? The answer is, if you're stupid enough to not understand this, I can't help you. That's why today I had to pull myself out of all of this and go up to the serpentine-rich areas of this mountain and look at some of the mountaintop. And as I'm looking at the rocks, I got to tell you, it's related to the economy in a way. I know I'm a little, you know, discursive here, but I look at the big rocks on the top of this mountain, and they're made up of magnesium, nickel, cobalt, chromium, etc. And I think back to the Civil War that almost bankrupted America, and I realize that here in California, in the neighboring state of Nevada, we had, which was once the largest silver stores, I think, discovered at the time, the Comstock Lode. And do you know that the Comstock Lode of silver was used to pay off the Civil War debt? Now think of what I just said to you. The war cost a great deal of money. The war nearly bankrupted America. But in those days, the politicians couldn't just print money. The money was tied to silver and gold. And so they used the silver, the minerals, in other words, in the earth of Nevada, the natural resources of Nevada, to pay off the war debt. Now, speed the clock forward. We have the Iraq War, which cost this country about $3 trillion, according to some estimates. Those ungrateful SOBs in Iraq have not sent us so much as a barrel of oil because we haven't taken it, nor have we demanded it. You know what I feel about that. We should have taken the oil to pay off the war debt at the very least. But the war debt was never paid off, and that was the beginning of our bankruptcy. Now, you can blame the welfare state all you want, and believe me, there's plenty of blame for the welfare state in terms of our bankrupt state. But the fact of the matter is, it was the war in Iraq that probably began the road that we will never come back from. We have not yet paid off the Iraq war debt. We're not paying off the Afghanistan war debt. Where in the world do you expect this to come from? I ask myself every day, when in fact they're not paying off the debt. What should we talk about? Serpentine rocks? Would you like me to talk about hiking on the mountain today? Serpentine rocks? And the fact that within 110 years, everyone listening to the show will be dead?
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.
All day. And I don't blame them. We can all agree that Trayvon Martin should be alive. Okay? But we can't forget about the recent shooting at the Jewish school in France by the Islamist Muslim who killed three Jewish children at point-blank range, shooting them in the head. Did you hear me? Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to talk about this tragedy is national security expert Ken Timmerman. Ken Timmerman, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you again.
So give the Savage Nation a little more detail on the assassination of the Jews in France.
Michael, look, I am not surprised at the murder of the Jewish rabbi and the children at the school. It's clear that the Islamic jihadi, the Muslim jihadi who carried out these murders, was targeting children. He wanted to cause as much pain and suffering as he could. He wanted to murder Jews. This is what they are taught in those camps in Afghanistan. And frankly, this is what the Muslim jihadi ideology is all about, murdering Jews and murdering Americans.
Was he working by himself? Was he a member of Al-Qaeda? Does it really make a difference?
Well, we don't know yet, Michael, whether this was a lone wolf attack or whether he was really working with Al-Qaeda. We know that this Algerian individual was trained in Al-Qaeda camps in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We know that he was exposed to their ideology. Whether this was something that was planned by Al-Qaeda Central or whether this was something that he undertook of his own initiative, we don't know that yet. I'm sure that the French police will be interrogating him. You know, one of the people I've worked with for many years, Judge Jean-Louis Bruguière, is one of the world's experts on Al-Qaeda. He, in fact, first discovered Al-Qaeda camps in 1995 in Pakistan. I've been working with him on terrorism cases for, you know, almost 20 years now. I'm certain that he will be involved in this one way or another. His expertise will be of use. My real fear, though, Michael, is that Al-Qaeda and people who share their ideology will operate here in the United States, that we will see attacks like this in the U.S. I have been warning for a number of weeks since the Capitol Hill police and the FBI picked up this would-be suicide bomber in Washington, D.C., that the Jewish community in Montgomery County, Maryland, and in the Washington suburbs is at risk, and they deserve greater protection. We don't want to see Jewish schools and Jewish institutions targeted by jihadi Muslims, and we don't want to wake up to this the next day, the day after, and say, oh, if only we had taken the right steps, we could have prevented this. We need to take those steps right now, and I've been calling here where I live in Montgomery County, Maryland. I've been calling on the local law enforcement, the FBI, and our elected officials to take those steps to protect the Jewish community.
What is the likelihood that something like this, God forbid, happens in the United States in the near future?
Well, we know, for example, that Hezbollah, which is the Iranian terrorist organization, has many underground cells in the United States of America. The FBI has been warning about that in public hearings for the past year at least. We know also from the head of the Southern Command that Hezbollah has been training in Mexico and in the tri-border area in Latin America to send people across our border, to send terrorists across our border into the United States. I think it's just a matter of time. I don't want to wake up after this happens and say, oh, gee, if only we'd taken preventative steps ahead of time. We need to be cracking down on those underground Hezbollah cells today. And I applaud the FBI when they do go after some of these people, but I'd like to see a bit more proactive action by them.
Well, do you think the Obama administration will do anything about Iran monitoring New York City landmarks?
Well, Michael, I must say I was not surprised when I heard this about Iranian government monitoring of New York City monuments. We saw al-Qaeda doing this in the 1990s. We saw Muslim Brotherhood people doing this in Maryland in 2004-2005. They were taking video photographs of the Bay Bridge across the Chesapeake. We know that they want to kill us. We know that they're looking for our weak points, and this is both the Iranian regime and the Muslim Brotherhood, the jihadi terrorists who are associated with al-Qaeda. So I think we need to wake up to this. We need to take off the blinders of political correctness and go after these people.
Can an Israeli strike on Iran be successful without the United States?
I believe that the Israelis will do what they must do to protect themselves and defend their country. And I think that they will devise a plan, whatever it may be, to defend themselves. I am not convinced, as some people are, that they will launch military strikes against Iranian nuclear weapons facilities. I think they have a lot of other tools in their toolbox. You've seen Iranian nuclear scientists who have suddenly been murdered in the streets of Tehran and elsewhere. You've seen a missile factory in November that was blown up mysteriously, according to the Iranian regime, it was a safety violation at the factory. Well, I bet that safety violation might have had something to do with explosives being brought into the wrong place and set off purposefully. So I think the Israelis have got a lot of other tools besides just sending in the Air Force, but I have no doubt that they will do what they need to do, regardless of what President Obama says or does not say. It's clear to me that President Obama is trying to put handcuffs on the Israelis, just as he's trying to embargo U.S. oil. He's trying to keep the Israelis from defending themselves. I have no doubt that Prime Minister Netanyahu will do what he needs to do.
Well, we all know that it's crucial that the U.S. stands by Israel, but under Obama, nobody really knows. What if Obama abandons Israel? What happens then?
Israel is our best ally in the Middle East. We share strategic objectives with Israel. We share also a common culture with Israel. I happen to be a Christian, and I believe I call myself a Christian Zionist. I think that we share such an important commonality in our belief system, in our moral system, and even in our faith system with Israel, in addition to all of those strategic things that we have in common, that we must stand by Israel.
Ken Timmerman, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great talking to you. You know, I'm running for Congress here in Maryland in the 8th District. It's timmermanforcongress.com if anybody's interested. We have a real opportunity to beat a limousine liberal, the right-hand man of Nancy Pelosi.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
No!
stunning round crying.
Go Nevada. Go Nevada.
I know I don't
I got the Obama travel stamp.
Oh,
we got the government travel stamp for Nevada. Harry Reid invite us. Give me a woman there. Government woman, government woman, government woman. Gonna give me a government woman there. I got a travel stamp. Ooh, I got a love stamp from Obama. Give me a free love in Nevada. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You can see what mood I'm in. I'm a very resilient man. I bounced back today for some reason. Some would call it manic depression, but it isn't. It's called a human being who feels things. You know, I actually feel the news. It starts to get to me like it's personal. And I have to be very careful. That's why today is a little different. So I'm talking about poverty. I'm talking about your poverty, my poverty, his poverty. My point is, what was your poverty like if you grew up poor? Let America really know, because you're going to tell stories today on this show that might shock people who don't realize what poverty really is. So let's go to the first caller. You're all invited to join the parade, 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, Roger, go ahead, please. You grew up poor. Tell us what it was like.
Yes, Dr. Savage. When Pop would buy us one pair of shoes a year, and it had to last all the way through the school year, when the soles ran out, we had to take cereal boxes and cut cardboard, put it in our shoes until Pop was ready to buy us another pair of shoes. Holes in our jeans, Mom would put patches, and if we...
Wait a minute, you sound awfully similar to Governor Jerry Brown. Are you the governor just having fun with me?
No, sir, this is...
No, you sound like Jerry Brown, being you calling from Sacramento. Come on, Roger, seriously, you actually put cardboard in your shoes?
I was born in Youngstown, Ohio, in a steel town, 1943. Grew up...
Oh.
40s and 50s, and my dad was a hard-working man, and I think he was trying to teach us a lesson on taking care of the things that were given to us.
Well, I did the same. In other words, I lined the shoes. I had more than one pair of shoes, but I lined them up under my bed, and I kept them polished. Would you believe it? I've always been the same, very fanatic about taking care of my things ever since I grew up with so little. I took care of what I had. It's very interesting, isn't it?
That's how I learned.
And no, it's funny. Even though, let's say, you grow older and you get a little successful and you have money, I still won't leave lights on in the house. And people laugh at me. They say, what are you turning off lights for? What, are you cheap? You know what my answer is? I don't know. It's just in me. Why not turn a light bulb off if you're not in the room? Why must it be on? Do you still do a thing like that?
Well, the audience won't believe me, but I do. I do. I'm sitting in my house. It's cold right now. I have the heat turned off. I have my water.
I love it. Well, I don't like heat to begin with. It dries me out. They think that they're living like in the Russian Revolution with me. They think it's like Dr. Zhivago in my house. I'd rather walk around like with a coat on in the house than run heat. Not to save money. I don't like heat. It makes me feel sick. So you really grew up that poor, but you did okay later on, or you're still poor?
Well, I'm doing better now. I've learned how to invest. I lived in a travel trailer for 19 years of my life and just got into a little house. I'm starting to save money, but the government seems to be wanting to take a lot of it away, so I'm kind of stripping back into the financial situation I was.
Uh-oh, not good. Yeah, but you're never going to go back to that level of poverty of putting cardboard in your shoes. Thank you very much for sharing. 1-800-449-8255. No, here's a caller. You're not going to believe this. Ann Arbor, Mish. Rick, welcome to the Savage Nation. Tell us your poverty story.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was born in the 50s, and my father moved around a lot. We lived in tents, and actually back then the tents didn't have bottoms in them, so when it rained, we had to dig ditches around the tent to keep from washing out.
That is amazing. This is almost like the Grapes of Wrath. You say you moved around. Were they itinerant workers or what?
He just moved from factory to factory, but we still had food. We still had government food. We had government cheese. We had government milk. We had the government meat. You know, we didn't have food stamps, but we still had food.
So in that sense, you have to say, thank God the government distributed excess food. I mean, you have to agree with that, right?
We go to food banks, you know.
But I'm saying that what I'm saying, there is a place for government assistance. I'm not one of these fanatics who say there should be no government help for the poor. I mean, people would starve to death. Don't you think, Rick?
Can't really say we were poor because we still had food in our
stomach. I'm saying A, he's saying B. But Rick, wouldn't you agree with me that there's a role for the government in assisting people who are poor?
Right. If there's no means, if they have no means.
That's correct. And if they're not able-bodied and they can't find work, you got to help people. You can't let them starve to death. See, that's why I say I'm an independent conservative. I don't take this hard line, oh, let them find a job, let them go out and create a business. That's such rubbish. There's no way to do that in some cases. Absolutely no way whatsoever. Well, I'm glad that, you know, this is turning into a very good topic, by the way. But, you know, what is a vacation, you know, when you were poor? Think about that. We had, we lived in the apartment. My father always had a car because he needed it for his business to go down to Manhattan to his little store to make deliveries. One of my books I wrote, The Look Come Out, when he delivered the bronzes out there to the guy with the one breast, you know, the circus, half man, half woman. That's a heck of a story. To believe these things existed, but they did. So we had an apartment and a car, but nothing else, you know, dead man's pants. But I never wanted for a meal, and I never felt poor. See, that's the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to make a point is that most kids don't even know they're poor. If they have the security of parents and friends and some family around and they eat, they're not poor. They don't know poverty. It's like a Sajat Ray movie, if you know what I'm referring to. The old movies, the films about poverty in India. In many ways, I used to relate to those movies because those lives were very rich. There's a lot of richness, by the way, in poor neighborhoods and a lot of poverty in rich neighborhoods. You've heard that? Because you know what I'm talking about. How many McMansions have you been in with the stainless this and the stainless that and a 1,000-square-foot kitchen that has never been cooked in? There's no smell of food. No one ever sits around a table, right? So that's what I mean by poverty inside the rich home and et cetera. I don't know if that still applies truthfully, but I know that in the immigrant communities today, I see it myself. If I drive through a community near where I live, which is largely Hispanic immigrants, you think it looks any different than it looked the way my life looked to me as a kid? It doesn't. I see most of the people struggling off to work. They're going back to crowded apartments with lots of relatives, and they're all together, and they have the ups and downs of life together, and some of them, you know, already have a car, and the one who has the car tries to show it off that it's better than his neighbor's car. It's identical to my upbringing. In that sense, there's a continuum of the immigrant life in America. Now, you could say from that point forward, though, where does it differ? The level of gangs in this country today was never equal to the level of gangs amongst the poor in my day, for example. You could argue maybe it was. If you go back to the early days when the Italians came here, I know you're not going to want to hear it, and the early days of the gang wars between the Irish and the Italians and the Jews, they were shooting each other in the streets with machine guns. That was before my time. How different is that when you think about it? From the MS-13 tattooed people killing themselves today, or the Crips and the Bloods 10 years ago when they were going through their power struggle. Was it any different? Was it a larger number of people killed? How do you compare Murder Incorporated in the days of the Euro immigrants to the Murder Incorporated of today? I mean, was it worse then or is it the same today? So you can over exaggerate the crime wave in America if you don't really look at the historic context. And I haven't done an epidemiological study in the sense of, you know, what the rate of murder was, I don't really know. Well, of course we'd all like a cleaner, safer country. But I'm not so sure it's much different than it was, is the point, even in those days amongst the Euro immigrants in that regard. There are big differences, though. The Euro immigrants all wanted to learn English. They all wanted to be American, with exception usually of the old country people who didn't. I mean, my grandmother never spoke a word of English. I don't know if you know this. I've told you this before. She never spoke to me in one word of English that I remember. She didn't know English. She didn't understand it. She was a very old woman when she got here, and she was very stoic. She didn't demand very much. There was no welfare. No one asked for the government to give her a dime. I'm going to put a picture of her you see her. This woman was really good. I loved her. That was my Russian grandmother. She looks like an American Indian with, like, very stoic, like the high cheekbones. That's where I got my good looks from, I'm pretty sure. I mean, no disrespect to the other side of the family, but an artist once told me I'd make a good subject because I have high cheekbones and I'd be a very good subject of a sculpture. I'm actually having a sculpture made, a bust made in my head. I never liked the word bust of a head. I didn't understand that as a kid. I would turn red when someone said, what do you think of the bust? I thought they were referring to the chest. I didn't know it meant the head, you know, bust. Look at the bust. Because my father was in the antique business. So if someone say, can I see that bust? I thought they were talking dirty to him. I run away in the back of the store. My face would turn. Kids don't know. They mix things up. But I have a sculptor, a very famous guy from San Francisco. I'm not going to mention his name yet. Who's going to be sculpting my head. Now, it's an interesting story unto itself. Why? What kind of ego does it take to have yourself sculpted while you're living? I don't know. I want to do it. Why? I'll tell you exactly why. There's a Chinese restaurant. See, everything relates to the food. There's a Chinese restaurant I go to in San Francisco where the owners, I love these people, they have like giant bronze statues of the head, busts now, of the grandfather and the grand... No, the mother and father who built the restaurant. And then the grandfather and grandmother, and I love looking at them because they have the dates of the grandmother's death, and she like died at like very young. And it was like she died in 1938. So I said, what happened? He said she was killed in the revolution in China at that time. But the point is that these are photo likeness busts that were made by a Chinese sculptor of bronze. They're great. Like you send photographs, and for some way to do it, they put it into a computer, and then they sculpt the thing, maybe by machine, and they come out fantastic. I'm not having one of those done. I'm not having a photo likeness done. This sculpture is very famous all over the world. He's done a couple of books. He's going to do an artistic rendition. God knows what it's going to look like. I hope it's not too, you know, overbearing. But nevertheless, why? I don't know why I'm doing it. I want one for me and one for each of my kids. And that's about it. And by the way, if you wanted a small little autograph copy, they're only $14.99 available in tin in Bolivia. We're going to sell them on a site in Bogota. So, yeah, poverty does suck. There's no question about it.